Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
So we're in that beautiful phase between the Champions Cup back-to-back weeks. And this weekend on Friday, Ulster, after their win in the Stoop, will have Harlequins in the Kingspan Stadium at 7.45 Friday night. Saturday, as we mentioned a few moments ago, Leinster-Exeter is a 7.45. I have 7.45 here. I don't think it is 7.45. I think it's afternoon. I'll double check that kickoff time for you. It says 7.45 here, but I'm sure it's in the afternoon. But they're against Exeter anyway at the Aviva Stadium. And then Sunday, Leicester-Munster is 5:30 at Welford Road. Connacht play Breve on the Saturday as well in Galway. I'll confirm that kickoff time for you in just a second at the Aviva. Eddie O'Sullivan is on the line. Evening, Eddie.
Evening, Joe.
So, look, let's get this out of the way first, because I appreciate for you and probably for everybody else, you and Warren Gatland and Ireland is ancient history.
Yeah.
But and I know that is your overriding sentiment here, and you've said your piece on this before. That said, from our point of view, he was on the show on Friday, I know you know, and had a few things to say about you. So we felt it appropriate to give you a right of reply, certainly. So did you hear the piece? Do you have thoughts on the piece? Are you upset with Gatland? Was it to be expected?
A bit bemused and disappointed by what he said, I suppose, you know. I met Warren a couple of times since he left Ireland. In fact, ironically, I met him and we spoke as recently as a week ago, or last Monday, I think, at the Irish Youth Foundation Sports Awards before the show. And he had an opportunity at that moment to raise any issues that he had with me, you know, face-to-face, man-to-man, and he said nothing. So, you know, then when we went on national radio and recounted those stories and stuff, just disappointed, you know, that stories were inaccurate and out of context, in my opinion. But unfortunately, there was a form of no right to reply. So I think it's sad that it happened that way.
Yeah.
Look, Warren has said many times he's moved on since Ireland, but in the back of those comments, it's hard to see that. And I suppose it's disappointing because for somebody who's had such a successful career, he's been hugely successful as a coach and continued to sue over things like 16 years ago. It's a pity. But sure, look, I moved on a long time ago and I thought he had too, but there you go, you know.
I want to give you a right of reply specifically on two things which jumped out at me, and then we can move on and get stuck into the weekend's rugby. The one maybe which jarred the most in the room and had an audible gasp related to the win in Paris, where he said this.
Donald said to me quite a few years ago, he just said, I want to tell you a story about that day. He said, I've never told you this. And I said, oh, what's that? And he said, we're in the change rooms and we're celebrating. Everyone's having a good time. And Eddie was sitting in the corner and Donald went over to him and said, what's wrong with you? Why aren't you celebrating? And Eddie said to Donald, oh, this means Gatland's going to be in the job for another 2 years. So it kind of, that when I got told that, Donald told me that story, it kind of summed up a few things. And
okay.
Well, I think Donald has confirmed that that never happened in the change room. I mean, the picture of me sitting in the corner, everyone celebrating, and me with a long face, like, it's a bit ludicrous, because I remember that win, actually. It was a fantastic win, everyone was celebrating. I mean, I was the backs coach. I mean, it was a great day for me because it kind of, I suppose I felt I'd kind of announced myself as a decent backs coach on an international level.
Yeah.
And I just got three toys, so I was just celebrating like anybody else. I'm sure I said to Donald later, even in the evening or day or two after, because we would have been talking, and that Warren was ready to go, setting his contract, that win would have really given him good leverage to get 2 years into the next World Cup. That's a reasonable observation, you know, I think, for somebody who was negotiating at the time. So I think the context of me sitting in the corner of the change room, everyone celebrating, like, I just, that didn't happen. So that's disappointing, you know. That's my take on that. You know?
Yeah, that's Donal Lennon, if people weren't too sure. The other one, I think...
Well, I think
yeah, go on.
Fair, Joe, Donal did confirm it wasn't in the change room.
Yeah, but just, yeah. I mean, we're just talking about Donal here. People might know it's Donal Lennon we're talking about.
Something I said after, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah, well, I would dare say it's something you talked about plenty of times outside of that scenario. The reason there was a gasp is because we had just beaten France.
Of course, but it didn't happen when we beat France.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It was a different setting, a different context. It was probably a discussion around his contract negotiations to extend into the World Cup, which was happening at that time, you know, before Donal left for the Lions. So, you know, that's a big difference than the picture of me sitting in a corner with a big long face having beaten France. It didn't happen, you know. So there you go.
Yeah. The other point I wanted to put to you, is because it ties into the overall narrative that you were, you know, the key man trying to get Gatland out of the job. You wanted the job for yourself. In your own autobiography, you mention 2007, Ireland played Wales and there was a post-match dinner against Wales and you were manager of Ireland, obviously, at that stage. And you were chatting to Warren. There'd been a lot of stuff in the media even that week, and this is going back 10 years. And you said to Warren that night, "I never did anything wrong to you. I didn't make the decision not to re-employ you. That was made by the IRFU. That's been hung around my neck since, which is grossly unfair. And you've bought into that idea." And so he tells a story here, which, look, the gist of it, it looks like you're coercing the players and trying to turn the players against Gatland. And here's what he had to say. Again, it's just a brief clip so people can hear.
I'll tell you a story that I've never repeated, and I haven't even told the person this. So we selected the team to play Scotland, and in the team was Ronan Nagara to start at 10. And at midnight that night, I get a knock on my door, and it's Eddie and Brian O'Brien. And Eddie says to me, "I think we've made a mistake at 10. And I said, "Okay." He said, "I think we should look at and change the tens around and pick David Humphreys." And I said, "Do you really think that?" And I said, he said, "Yeah, I think we've made a mistake there." I said, "Okay, right." So we changed the team sheet. The team has been announced the next day. And so we put David Humphreys to start 10. I think Kieran Dawson started 7, and that was another debatable selection. So the next day we name David Humphreys at 10, and we leave Ronan Nagara out. And later that day, Ronan Nagara comes to me and says, "I'm pretty disappointed about being left out of the team and not being selected. I've spoken to Eddie, and Eddie said to me, at the end of the day, you were the coach and you had the final say." So, and I never said anything to Ronan. I've never ever told him that story. And, you know, so, you know, those...
What did you say to Eddie?
I didn't say anything to Eddie in the end, you know, so... We struggled from a personal point of view in terms of a relationship.
So the implication there is you should have said to Rog, I was a big part of that decision, and in Gatland's opinion, you're foisting that one on him to try and, I don't know, damage his relationship with Rog or shirk that one.
Again, the context of that story... was that we had that selection meeting, and Brian O'Brien, who was the manager, and I were of the belief that David Humphreys was the correct decision to go to Cardiff. And the reason for that was we'd just been to Scotland in the first game of the rescheduled Six Nations, the foot and mouth.
Yeah.
And we got absolutely butchered in Scotland, 32-10. We were just embarrassing there. And Warren wants to go back into Roger, a really tough time that day, like the rest of the team, but he was very young fly half the time. He was in his second season. And the point we made was that Holmes had more experience going into a very hostile environment like Cardiff. And the truth of the matter was, if Warren had lost in Cardiff, a general opinion was he was gone. He was on the trap door at that stage. And myself and Brian were trying to convince him that it would be a more stable selection. And he wouldn't make this. He kind of dug in it, and we said, fine. And we left the room, and we both believed it was the wrong selection. And we went back down to him on the basis that we wanted to get the right selection. And it was myself and Brian, it wasn't just me. And we talked to him again. Brian talked to him. Brian was a hugely experienced selector. Brian was a selector when Ireland last won the Triple Crown. And that was his opinion. And I was sympathetic with him. And Warren then decided, okay, you know, he took it on board. So we did make the change and we won the game. And, you know, Warren was in a better place after it. So that was the context of it. And it's in my book on page 151 of my autobiography. Now, the right side of it was, I'm sure Raj came to me, and I would have told him why that decision was made. But what surprised me was that he would come to me and not the head coach. So I would have said to him, look, Warren's the gaffer as well. You should go to him as well. You should go talk to him as well. I mean, I've always dropped players myself. I've always done it. I haven't. But Raj hadn't been told why he was dropped at that stage. So he came to me, and then he went to Warren. So I don't know why he came to me first, but I would have told him why. But I would have also advised him to go to the head coach and discuss with him. I don't think there's anything untoward about that. Mm. And again, in the context of, you know, here was two guys, myself and Brian O'Brien, trying to give him good advice that would have, you know, possibly saved his job at the time, because we were in a very bad place. Turns out the story is that you know, it was a negative story. I thought it was we were trying to do the right thing by him.
Mm.
So there you go.
Yeah. Again, like, I mean, look, we can move on ultimately because it is a long time ago.
I'm surprised we're talking about this 16 years on.
Yeah, I would have thought Gatland, considering his career since, would be over, but clearly he's still not happy with it. There are two, look, I don't know what went on quite clearly, and a lot of people don't, and it depends who you talk to half the time, you get different versions of events. And one, everyone agrees that the working relationship between you two was difficult, and that's fair enough, and that happens. And then the bone of contention is over why Gatland lost his job, and he quite clearly feels that you wanted his job, and in some way, shape or form, implicitly or explicitly, you were part of that process of ousting him, and you deny that and reject that completely. And that's where we are.
It's a convenient narrative, because back in 2001, he admits himself openly that his relationship with the RFU, his employers, was not in a good place. And he said that himself, I think, many times, and he's unhappy with the RFU. I mean, Keith Wood has said, who was the captain of the team, on Newstalk a number of years ago, I was on with him. He said that he believed at that time Warren had taken the team as far as he could go. And if I'm not mistaken, last week, I think Woody might have said on that show that he didn't believe Warren should have been his contract renewed.
Yeah, he said it to him.
So you have the RFU, who his relationship wasn't the best with, who were his employers. You had the captain of the team who wasn't happy. But the villain in the plot is the assistant coach. So, you know, I mean, look, I'm not going to convince Warren, but like, it's been hung around my neck, and that's an opinion that's there for a long time. But maybe, you know, he kind of should look in the mirror as well, because at the time, you know, when he left, his win percentage was 40-something%. Now, Declan Kidney left with a win percentage of 50-something%. I left a win percentage of 60-something%. Neither of us are complaining that we were badly treated, you know.
Mm.
So, like, they're the facts at the time, you know. The question for the RFU was he the guy to take the team to the 2003 World Cup? The RFU decided he wasn't. Keith Wood said he wasn't in favour of it. So, like, that's the way it played out. So to make me the villain in the whole thing, it's a bit much, you know. But it's been there for years, and it's surfaced again now on the back of this. But
yeah,
I said I moved on. I thought he had as well, but obviously he hasn't. But look, that's the way it is. I said I've moved on. I can't do any more. You know, I just, life goes on. I've left it behind. I thought he had too, but there you go.
In 07, one last point then. In 07, at the post-match dinner, the Ireland-Wales game, where you kind of confront him over the stuff which has been said in the media, which is pretty much in keeping what we're discussing here about your role and the loss of his job. When you say to him, look, you've bought into this narrative, it's been hung around my neck, it's grossly unfair. Did he concede that point? Like, have you ever had it out with him? Was it there or another time?
He did, actually. He did, because he said that to me that night. Well, he said, Woody had played a part. And I said, well, if you're unhappy with Woody, you should talk to Woody about it. But you shouldn't be blaming me. And that was it. He didn't contest it at all. We just, the conversation stopped there, and we went on to talk about other things.
Right.
Like our families and stuff, you know, like general chit-chat stuff. So right. I wanted to say that to him back then. It was my only chance to get to say it to him, and I was, like, face-to-face, man-to-man, I was happy to say it to him and see what he had to say.
Mm.
And he didn't contest it then. So, right. You know, when it all comes up again now, as I say, like, almost, well, that was 2007, it's 2017, and 10 years later, it scratched my head and wonder, you know.
So
that's it, you know, that's life.
Yeah.
I said, look, I moved on, and I thought he had too, but what can you do?
Yeah. Sure, look, I guess we'll talk about it again the next time he's over.
And well, I hope not.
We'll keep on going. The 20-year anniversary.
I would like to think it's done and dusted now at this stage.
Yeah, okay. Anything else you want to add, or we move on?
Oh, yeah, we'll move on, you know, yeah.
Okay.
It's ancient history.
So, the weekend's games, 3:15. Yes. 3:15 is actually the Leinster kickoff against Exeter as opposed to evening. So, Leinster 14 points, Exeter and Montpellier are on 8 points in this group. By most people's assessment, Leinster were very, very good at the weekend, although maybe they won it in a way they mightn't have had to expect to win it. Are you expecting a dramatically different game on Saturday?
I don't think it'll be that different. I think Leinster's performance last weekend was the performance of the weekend. I mean, they beat Exeter at their own game. It was a fantastic performance. I didn't expect Leinster to play that way. I didn't think they had to play that way, but maybe they were making a statement the way they went about their business. They just pommeled Exeter into ground every chance they got. And that's a fair achievement in Exeter. So I can imagine that they'll probably try and do the same next weekend. Now, Exeter are going to come back and play. Exeter don't roll over. And I suppose you may say Exeter try and play out of their shape a little bit, because the try Exeter got was a very, just a complete shift in their shape. They went wide twice and caught Leinster. So maybe Exeter might be the ones that will change this weekend, and Leinster will stay to what worked from last week. So that'd be the interesting thing. You know, maybe Leinster have just jolted Exeter out of their comfort zone here, and we might see Exeter come with a different game plan than we'd expect, maybe hoping to catch Leinster. But I thought Leinster were outstanding. I mean, I think in fairness, Rob Baxter, he didn't say it after, but you could see it written all over him that he knew they just got beaten by a better team on the day, and he wasn't making excuses, which is, you know, his form. He's a very straight shooter. So, but I think he knows he's got his work cut out this weekend coming to Dublin, and they're going to have to pull a rabbit out of a hat now to beat Leinster. I think it'll be a shock if they beat Leinster. I'm not saying it's not possible, but it's hard to see Leinster letting it slip now. They've done the hard bit.
Yeah.
They've really sent out a message last weekend to everybody in Europe.
Yeah, because Stuart Lancaster was on the show last night, and he was saying, he made the point that Exeter didn't really contest the rooks, so it meant a lot of hard yards for Leinster as the game went on, not least when Jack Conan scores after 44 odd phases. And you know, Lancaster was very pleased that Leinster won that way, but then I suppose in the first 20 minutes as well, they really moved the ball very well. It looked like they were going to rip Exeter open. So like, the really pleasing thing for Leinster perhaps at the moment is they can win any way you want.
Yeah, it's a very, very good Leinster team. Like, they basically 19 internationals on deck last weekend, you know, and just the quality and the quantity of players they have. Now, they've lost Reece Ruddock this week. He's a big loss, but they've good depth in the back row. Hopefully Sexton, you know, all the indicators are he's going to play. I think he is very important. You know, his experience in terms of the game management and, you know, knowing when to push the right buttons, you can't put enough importance on that in those type of games. So I think, yeah, if he's playing, I think that's going to be crucial. But I expect he will. But I just think Leinster just are building really, really nicely as a team, you know, as an operation in terms of their Pro 14 performances, now the European performances. Like, they're keeping two pots boiling really, really well. And I was hugely impressed with the way they went about their business last Sunday.
Saracens lost on the Monday. Other teams have maybe come back slightly as well. Like, you know, Lancaster was also trying to dampen expectations because...
Well, as you would expect.
Yeah, but there's a growing sense now that Leinster really, really have a big chance of winning this competition outright now.
Well, look, you can only judge them on their performances and whether it's good or bad, but last week's performance was one of those performances that could win you a trophy. You know, it was just very, very solid in every department, and they did exactly what they wanted when they wanted. And you know, if they keep on that track, now look, things happen. They get injuries, or you know, you get caught on a bad day. Oh, that's sport. But of what we've seen, they've been the most impressive team last weekend by a country mile, I thought.
And Munster have to go to Welford Road, so they beat Leicester in the end, 33-10. It was it's just very convincing from minute one, really. The breakdown in particular, a lot of people pointed, that's where Munster destroyed Leicester. And Dunnock O'Callaghan was on Monday and just made the point that Jerome Garcia, Matt O'Connor said it too, he talked about Munster being cynical. He effectively said that Munster adapted to Jerome Garcia's refereeing at the breakdown, which was effectively to let most things go.
Well, I don't think that most things go. I just think he refereed it the way we referee it in the Pro 14, and it's refereed probably in France. I think Dunica pointed out Monday night that it's a much more sanitised environment in the UEFA Premiership, the breakdown. Referees don't want real contests. They tend to manage the contests, and they don't let you get away with much. In other words, it's always in favour of the attacking team. For that reason, Munster just got into Leicester, and they didn't know what was going on at the breakdown. They were just knocked for six. And once Munster got into them, that was a big part of their game gone. They couldn't build pressure. They couldn't deliver continuity. They lost big turnovers. But I think even outside of that, that's one dimension to the game. I just thought Leicester were very, very poor. Disappointingly poor. Now, I don't say that to take anything away from Munster's performance. They still put 33 points on Leicester. But I thought Leicester almost looked disinterested at times. They looked sloppy. It just was very on Leicester. Now, I think the problem is that there'll be a reaction to that. There's no way they're going to play that badly back in Welford Road. And we saw last year, look, you know, they can come bounce back from that. But it didn't. It was nothing like the Leicester team of old that we know. And I think that's a little bit of a worry for Munster. Like, it's not going to be as easy next weekend. There's no doubt about that. And I don't think Matt O'Connor will allow Munster the same latitude they had last week at the breakdown. He's just going to put more people in. He's going to be more precise and not give them those opportunities, because they were kind of the bedrock of the win. Mm. It took away like Leicester's game from them, in essence.
I also
need to change their momentum as well. They need to bring more energy to the game than they did last week.
I didn't really understand why Leicester couldn't adapt at some stage to what was going on at the breakdown. Like, is there not enough experience there to get everybody in at some point and say, this is clearly what's happening, let's murder them
maybe,
here?
Maybe they don't have enough experience to do that. You know, they don't, like, if you looked at Leicester team as well, it's not the Leicester teams of old. Like, there's not eight English internationals in it, you know. Mm. It's more diluted as a Leicester. Sometimes you look at a brand name like Leicester and you expect it's the same Leicester. But Leicester have been in kind of a transitional period for the last few years. They haven't really, you know, they're not the Leicester of old that would take you to the woodshed up front and then cut you apart behind when time is right. Leicester aren't in that space anymore. So they just met a Munster team as well. They're well able for them.
Yeah.
But I just think they hadn't any energy. I didn't see the fight in them, which that's the only thing that surprised me last weekend. Well, I didn't see the fight in Leicester, and they got bullied at the rocks, and you're right, they didn't respond at all.
Yeah.
They didn't actually raise a heckle, you know.
See, that raises a very interesting point when you look at the Pro 14 Premiership results as a whole over the weekend, a clean sweep for the Irish provinces. Like, Dunica was on Monday made the point, like, Ben Youngs has played every single game for Leicester this season. Conor Murray has played 6 times for Munster. Mm. So you would just have to presume that everybody, especially in this competition, does have the right attitude, wants to do really, really well. Like, tiredness, we could be mistaking tiredness here for attitude. It's perfectly conceivable that a lot of these guys are beaten up.
Well, Ben Youngs might be the best example, because he didn't go on the Lions tour, you know.
Yeah.
You know, for personal reasons, he didn't go. And
but has played every game for Leicester.
Yeah, he has. But look, we're only into December. You know, it's half the season. If this discussion would be, I think, valid maybe in April. You know, because they've a lot of games under their belt. But I think before Christmas, it doesn't stand up. You know, okay. It's too early in the year. Like, if they're going to be tired now, they're going to be in terrible shape in April.
Mm. We talked. I mean, some of the players we touched on Monday included Chris Clute, the flanker for Munster, who made a really good impression. I wanted to get your thoughts, Eddie, on Sammy Arnold. At 13, who's still only 21 years of age. He's had plenty of injuries. Ulster decided to let him go ultimately. Brian O'Driscoll on BT gave Sammy Arnold man of the match. So how good is this guy? What kind of player is he for you?
Well, again, just going, I mean, he's kind of a bolter. Nobody was talking about him a month ago, really. And suddenly he had a massive performance. I thought he had a fantastic game. And he's first, the game the week before, he backed it up again on a bigger stage. So I think, the guy has certainly made a statement. Again, it's great for Munster that they have a guy now who's pitching up in that position. There's more options for them. But I think, credit where credit is due. The guy has certainly put down a marker. Now, the trick for him is to keep that out there, you know. And I think he'll get opportunities now at Munster. You know, Van Grand would have been happy with him. He's a new coach. He's going to put guys in that are doing the business, as he's shown. Like, you know, he put in Alex Wotton ahead of Sweetenham, which was a big call, but he went ahead and did it because he liked what he saw, wouldn't, you know, who has been on fire for Munster. So look, I think Arnold's got dipped in his teeth and he just has to keep plugging away, but he was very impressive, I have to say. I mean the guy is ticking all the boxes again, so like, that's a big plus for Munster. I thought he was a standout guy, Arnold, for sure.
Do you see Ulster winning, or do you see Munster winning rather?
I think they will, but it'll be probably a much tougher game. It'll probably have a lot of edge to it. So, like, if someone does something, say, like, a yellow card, it could be a game changer. Mm. So they'll have to keep their... And I think Munster have to be careful not to get drawn into that. They don't need to know. You know, they just have to keep doing what they were doing last week. And I think they'll get there. But they have to not get drawn into a bare-knuckle brawl. And then, you know, that could undo them. Mm. I think they're the better team. But it won't be as easy, for sure. I think Leicester are going to bring something, but it might only be physicality and aggression. And I don't think Munster should be worried about that, unless they get sucked into some sort of silly bugger stuff, you know, with fist fights and stuff, or pulling and dragging. They don't need to do that. But other than that, I think they're going to get there, for sure.
If there's an expectation that Leicester at Welford Road are going to fight and show some pride and some... a thirst to redeem themselves. There is also a general consensus that Harlequins going to Belfast won't, by contrast. Do you share that view?
I've been inclined to, after, you know, the way Ulster put them to the sword last week, all in terrible conditions, but they were the better team by a mile. I think if the conditions were even better, they probably won by more. Right. John Kingston's comments as well, you know, that, you know, they're not targeting Europe. They're almost saying that, you know, there had been enough. I don't think they're going to be going there with any expectation of beating Ulster. But Ulster, again, if they play to par, they'll win. But Ulster flaw has been not playing to par when they should. And I still think last weekend's win will put them in a good mental space, and I think they will put in a big performance at home, and they will win. If they don't, I think they'll have themselves to blame. I don't think Harlequins are going to Belfast with any really expectation of taking a win out of it.
Okay, we'll chat about those games on Monday. Thanks, Eddie.
Okay, Joe. Thanks a million.